from Legal Nomads. It's Jody Ettenberg.
Welcome to the Chris Ruggiero Podcast.
Have you ever thought about quitting your job to, say, travel the world and experience new cultures and new foods and new experiences? Well, that's exactly what Jody did. She took a year off, what she thought would be 1 year off from her career as a lawyer, and traveled the world, experienced food and new things, and it kept going. So she is going on 8 years now of doing this, writing on her blog, legalnomads.com, and she's here today to share some experiences and tips and how she makes it all work and some of the cool things that she's been able to experience. So we're going to get right into it. Thank you, as always, for listening to the show. The Chris Ruggiero Podcast is available at chrisruggiero.com/podcast or on Stitcher, on iTunes, on the podcast app, wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to subscribe. And if you like the show or do not like the show, leave a rating, review, comment wherever you are listening. Let us know how we can make it better, or let us know that it's perfect and you love everything about it. If you love everything about it, thank you. You're the best. Here we go. I think that's all you need to know. Thanks to Jody for joining me. Thank you for listening and enjoy.
Thank you very much for having me today. It's always a pleasure to chat with new people, hear about their life stories too. I am a former lawyer, so I'm Canadian. I went to law school in Canada and I worked as a lawyer in the States for about 5.5 years. And I quit my job expecting to take a 1 year sabbatical and then come back to being a lawyer again. And what happened over the last 8 years, because somehow it has already been 8 years that I've been doing this, is that I started to write long form pieces about travel and food. I started doing that just so my family could keep up with me and, like, when they wanted, check out a blog instead of, you know, me bombarding them with emails. But the site grew over the years and it's become this great platform for me to hopefully change the way people see food as they travel and to also advocate for people to learn as much as they can about a place through the things that they eat. So that's kind of broadened through public speaking. I wrote a book about food. I still do long form writing, and I do these hand drawn maps of food as well that are one of a kind, that sort of all tie together under the same idea.
Cool. That's, I love the, yeah, we'll try to jump back into a lot of those things. That's such a good summary and already inspiring, I know, for people to hear that what you're doing is possible. The one thing that I kind of wanted to jump, I'm just going to jump right into this idea that I was thinking about with you, is the thought of that you took this 1 year initially, what you thought would be 1 year, and just were doing the blog and the site for kind of like, not for yourself, but for yourself, and not really expecting maybe it for it to be, to become anything more than just a platform for you to share. At what point did you realize that it was going to be more than simply that?
So I think it's very natural for people to project onto me this narrative that they see commonly in society, especially for lawyers, that, oh, I must have burnt out and then, like, fled my profession and then followed my dream, which is doing what I do. And it's totally inaccurate. I actually never wanted to be a food or travel writer. It just happened very organically. And I truly was going to return back as a lawyer and work in microcredit, microfinance, doing more public advocacy work because I was previously working at a firm. So the first thing to say is that only because it's not as though I, you know, determinedly left to do the thing I had always wanted. It was that I discovered it along with others as I kept going. And I think it's probably about 2 years in, you know, for the first year, basically I had budgeted what I thought would be what I needed for a year, and I ended up being severely under budget. I didn't know that I would be obsessed with street food, and I didn't know how cheap street food was. I hadn't been to Southeast Asia before, and I think once I figured out, oh, this chunk of money I had put aside is actually stretching farther than I thought, I just kept going for that period and kept writing. And in 2010, I was living in Bangkok, and I received an email from someone at CNN Travel, which was then called CNN Go. And they had found my blog through friends who were also based in Bangkok and had asked me if I'd be willing to sign on as a stringer for a year. So basically that meant I would be on their roster of freelancers to be able to write for them in Asia should they need me. And I think that was probably the tipping point for my brain, at least, to be like, wait a second, this is actually potentially something other people are interested in. Before that happened, there were people commenting on the blog that were like, not my mother, which confused me. Like, who are these people? Because it was really my clients that I had as a lawyer, my friends, my family that were paying attention. And you know, I think coming in to a profession like travel writing, when travel writing online was sort of just beginning now it's exploded, right? There are thousands of travel blogs out there. In 2008, there weren't. And I had, I think, a first mover advantage, but also my goal was never like get free shit. You know, I wasn't looking to do press trips or get fancy hotels or anything like that. It was, I did this because I wanted to experience the world instead of just reading about it. And I always loved to read in long form. And so I wrote in long form, you know. Those are things that I think contributed to the success, but they were all things that people told me were stupid at the time. I should write shorter pieces. I should think about, you know, getting press trips or whatever. And that's just not what I wanted. So when people ask me about like their ideas, if they're trying to set out and pursue something different, like you have to be able to be comfortable with how you portray yourself online, because that's not something that you can really modify ex post facto. Like, you are going to be, the internet's forever. You are who you are online. Even if you modify it, you know, that other you is accessible. And so whenever you decide to formulate a version of yourself that you're going to share, you need to be comfortable with standing for that person also.
Yeah, there was something in there. There was a lot there that's great. And something that just resonated with me was in this thought. I was thinking back to there's a previous episode that I chatted with a friend that we have, Colin Wright, who is also doing traveling full time and writing and created a world that is amazing for himself. And he had this line that he said when I was talking to him about creating content and, you know, creating this online thing. And as you said, there's thousands of travel and food blogs now. And so many people are coming into wanting to be this Instagram celebrity or blog celebrity or YouTube celebrity and forcing this content, like coming up with content for the sake of coming up with content so that it becomes something. And Colin talked about how content shouldn't be something you create for the sake of creating content. You should be living experiences. The experiences come first, and if you can document them as you are living them and experiencing them, then that becomes the content. I don't know. I think he definitely said it better than I did. And I think that's what kind of resonates with what you're doing. You did this because you didn't start doing it with this idea of, oh, this is going to become a huge blog. And as you said, people are going to send me free stuff and all this stuff, which is what I think a lot of people are doing now.
Yeah, I think there's nothing wrong with that either. You know, everyone's got a different plan of what they need in life. That is a business model for some people, right? And while I don't think it would be fulfilling to me, I can't argue if it's fulfilling to them.
Yeah.
I just think that, you know, the content you create, as Colin says, has to be something you stand behind. And for me, if it was just about money, I would say being a lawyer, you know. The beauty of what I've built, for me at least, is that every single day, my work is what allows me to be as curious as possible and to go and ask questions and learn as much as I can from people, from places, from, you know, the history of the dishes I'm eating. That itself is so much more rewarding, and that is what drives the work I do. It isn't, sure, everyone needs money to live, and I'm not a hyper minimalist. Colin definitely is more than I am. But I think you know, there has to be a sense of meaning in what you're putting together in a way that transcends just the base money you're earning, because otherwise it's just another job like anything else. And that doesn't mean go out and find your passion, because I think that's terrible advice. You know, it's just amorphous, terrible advice. It's, you know, figure out how to put meaning into the work that you do, or, and if you can't, then, well, how do you add meaning in your life in a different profession or in a different hobby that, that provides you enough to keep you going?
Yeah. Now, going back to your thoughts of, as you said, the first year you realized that you actually saved up, had more budget than you were expecting to have. It's kind of an amazing. I think that shows really what mindset you are in, and I think most people, or I guess I always try to talk for myself only because that's all I know, but a lot of people, I think, would say, oh, this is how much money I have for the year, and if it looked like there was extra, that would somehow end up being spent by the end of the year. And I think that gives, I want to give you credit for having the power and will to realize that and make it work for even longer. And then added to that, I wanted to say, you made it sound easy. As you,
the saving part, or the which part sounds
the easy? The jumping in and making it happen. So you,
yeah,
made
that's
it sound
actually easy. That's interesting, because people do. So the question I get most from readers or in interviews is often like, "How did you take the leap?"
Yeah,
and I just didn't think about it that way. I don't think, like, I've always had anxiety. It's not like my brain doesn't worry. I worry a lot. Probably more than is reasonable or necessary. But I think, you know, sure, there were white nights where I didn't sleep at all, being like, what happens when I get somewhere and I don't know how to go from, like, the airport to the city? Like, the things I worried about were, like, my safety, my, like, practically how was I going to handle, like, an identity shift from, you know, I went to law school pretty young. I had always worked as a lawyer. Like, then I would just be doing this and be confused. I think that was part of my concern. But I don't think I ever wanted to be a partner at a law firm or to be a lawyer forever. And I had the benefit of being Canadian, so I didn't have the kind of school debt Americans have and could be taken with almost a bit more hubris, because there was no staggering debt on my head. And to me, I was like, you know, I have the skills that I can come back to. I thought I was coming back. I mean, it certainly was frightening to think, like, what happens at the end of this trip? I didn't know the trip wouldn't end. But the idea of, like, taking that leap, I don't know if it's necessary to put so much pressure on yourself. I don't discount how frightening it is to shift focus and to pivot into something new. And I definitely felt terrified. But if you have a skill set that you can leverage, then it is and should be less scary. You know, I always talk about Cal Newport, because I think his writing is a great antidote to the follow your passion crap. And he's always saying, you know, like, get good enough at something that if things go wrong, you still have that thing. And I think that's a really good way to sort of put a wet blanket on the anxiety that comes with making a big life shift. I don't mean to downplay it. Like, in retrospect, it's been 8 years now, right? Like, this, I still don't know where it's going. I still have uncertainty every day. I came from an extremely lockstep profession. Lawyers, you know, their salary moves exactly the same amount every year when they're in the firm. It's all set out for you. You know, that's like going from sweating the small stuff to, like, you can't sweat the small stuff because you don't know where the stuff's going to be. And that is a lot of mental angst for sure. But I didn't see it, like, as a choice in the way that people throw it back at me. It was just, I knew that being a lawyer to me wasn't what I wanted in life, and that every day I spent at that desk in New York felt like a day closer to dying as a boring person. And that wasn't, and there was nothing else I needed, right? Like, that sort of existential angst was something that I could act upon because I had the privilege of acting upon it. I was born into, like, you know, a middle class American Canadian family, you know, not in the middle of a slave boat in Thailand. You know, there's a lot of privilege there. But once you can acknowledge you have that privilege, if you do, then it becomes a choice about acting on it. And to me, the inertia that I was trapped in was far worse than the uncertainty of what could be.
I like how your brain and thoughts connect together to, you're very aware of a lot of things, which is nice to hear. Because I think a lot of people who might see what somebody like you is doing might think that it's just a, like, crazy adventure that you're not thinking about, but you're obviously thinking a lot and aware of all these things that are happening and the decisions that you've made that allow you to keep this happening. And, you know, there's more to it than the initial surface.
Yeah. And, you know, I started writing more about anxiety and things like that on my site recently because, you know, I think it's important to show both sides. I do, you know, I do love the adventure. I do obsess over where to eat pretty much every second of every day. And I think those are really important parts of my personality and why the site has become successful. But, you know, I'm too type A to just be happy with that, I guess, is the best way of saying it. Like, my brain, of course, has always skewed toward, like, where can this go and how can I add some sort of value in some way to people who, you know, are stuck with all the surface content on the web and are being told falsely that everything can be easy because it's just not, that's just not life.
The thoughts that you had going into things like just navigating an airport or going to this new place and not knowing how to, you know, get on the train or get a thing or whatever it is. And that's something that resonates with me because, as my listeners will know, I travel with my live show and I travel alone almost all of the time. Mm-hmm. And when I first started doing it, it was like that same thing. I was like, you know, every single aspect of it, it was like, how do I ask for a sound system at the venue when I get there? Or how am I going to get this juggling equipment onto an airplane? Mm-hmm. Like, am I allowed to do that? And same things, like, how do I get from this part of the airport to this other place? And there's just this endless dialogue in my brain that was, felt like it was there trying to give me all of the reasons why it would be easier to go to a job where I had to show up at a desk and, you know, do whatever that job would be. And luckily, I was able to silence a lot of those things and get through them. And for me, all of those problems, those problems exist for sure, of like me lugging unicycles through airports and stuff. And it, like, it sucks, but like I do it and then I get to the show and it's worth it. I wanted to get your thoughts on that. You kind of said that was a thought, thinking about it, but then how does that play out in actual, like, you obviously aren't giving up and aren't stopping. So those obstacles aren't stopping you. And that's what I was interested in.
Yeah. I mean, I think anything in life has that component, especially if your brain trends toward anxiety, you know, like you think about these things because they're practical concerns. Someone else may be like, yeah, I'll figure it out when I get there. But, you know, this is a thing that you have on your mind for good reason. You know, there's validity in that sequence. I think, you know, for me, it just took, like anything, believing that I had the ability to handle it when things went wrong. And I think that's kind of the antidote to those that sequence of worries where, yes, I may not know how to get there, but now at this point, I've been doing this for long enough that it's going to be okay. And even when it isn't okay, there's often a way out. You know, it comes with like having faith in your own ability to handle stuff when it goes awry. And that took time for me at the beginning, right? I didn't know what I was doing, and I certainly hadn't traveled alone, and I wasn't savvy. But I think there's a learning curve to any newness that you put in your life. And that's part of the challenge of keeping your brain active and pushing yourself to do the things that may seem scary. You know, scary can be anything. There's no reason to judge what is scary to one person versus another. You know, for me, it was worrying about those things. For other people, it might be, you know, something less significant to them or more significant. It's not me to judge. But I think the way to handle that is always to just, you know, arm yourself with sufficient information. And then eventually you'll see, we all do, that there's a way out. You figure it out when you're there.
I want to get your thoughts on what's next for you. I like to explore this idea of we all have this horizon that we're reaching for. And I know a question that people ask, I get it a lot, is what's my ultimate goal? And I don't like that question because I don't think there is this ultimate destination of once we reach our horizon, we are obviously presented with a new horizon, which will infinitely be bigger and better. So my question is, what's next for you?
I spend summers in North America, usually in winters, somewhere delicious. Not that North America is not delicious, but it is colder, and I tend to go somewhere warmer. So the last 8 years I've been in Asia in the winters, different places. I've rented places for 4 and 5 months. So next winter I will do what I did this past winter, which is go back to Oaxaca in Mexico. Yagul is where they think corn was domesticated. I have celiac disease, and corn is a good place for me to be. So I will head there. But business-wise, you know, I've been slowly broadening the avenues that I want to get better at. I started public speaking, I guess, in 2011 was the first year I ever presented. And I've worked my way from panels to keynotes. And it's something I'm always trying to improve. I just read 4 books on public speaking in the last few months because I did a presentation in Denver recently that I was more worried about than usual. And I'm building a big database for celiacs with really detailed translation cards that don't exist anywhere else. A lot of the cards out there are very specific to wheat, barley, and rye. But a lot of countries, especially developing ones, have no idea what those things are in. And so it's like very researched. It's been professionally translated. And then there are branded cards, and eventually there'll be an app. That's a big part of what keeps me going also, because people with this disease have a really hard time traveling, and you don't want to, you know, impose your food issues on a different culture. I'm not upset, let's say, that like nobody understands the disease in these other countries, because why should they? But I do think it's valuable to try and mitigate those worries and give information where you can. So those two aspects of my work are becoming more important, and I'm excited to be working on them.
Awesome. That's great that you're working for, offering even more value to people from something specifically that you are living and dealing with. So I would like to finish this off, and I think as often happens, these conversations kind of become a summary of how I like to end it, but I'll let you tie up these ends with the thought of someone who is listening at home or wherever they are, and they're feeling stuck in this rut in whatever it is, if it's work or business or personal issues, and they see somebody like you who's out there living, actually living, and they want to take that step or make something happen in their life. What advice do you have for that person who is listening, and an attainable step that they can take in their life?
I mean, for me personally, I think the really important thing for my brain is, and for others that I've spoken to who came out of a much more traditional profession, is to really understand, you know, what your worst case scenario is. There's all this literature and like shiny books about like, you know, how to just seize life. And I think that doesn't take teaching. Like you, everyone's version of that is very different. But what does take some forethought is to understand your own limits of what the worst case scenario is. Like for me, I was like, I'm not going to go below this amount in my savings account or else I'm going to go back to being a lawyer. And that was my worst case, being a lawyer again, not because it's so horrific, but because it was like a step in the direction away from where I wanted to be going. Once this business took off, right? So I was like, okay, all this uncertainty, that is my worst case. When I set out originally, my worst case was, okay, if I hate traveling the way I think I will like traveling, worst case is I come home and I pick up where I left off. Like, there is a pride issue there, but it's not the worst thing in the world. I think understanding what your personal worst case is and then understanding how to make that into something you can talk about are both really important. So much of what makes taking this kind of leap difficult is the dialogues you have with other people who should be enthusiastic for you, but are instead jealous and negative. And I think having like a set understanding of how you want to handle that in those conversations goes a really long way toward making you feel better about your choices too. But also gives you that comfort in your own mind. Okay, I have these like 7 awesome skills. I can use them in these following ways. Like, if this doesn't work out, this thing I want to try, like how can I then leverage those skills to try something different that is more stable, or that I can then be like, hey, mom and dad, I know this sounds crazy, but like, here's what I'm going to do. And if it doesn't work out, here's what I'm going to do instead. That goes a long way.
Cool. That's great. I think, again, these, I'm going to listen back to this and I think be really, really inspired and amazed by the stuff that you're doing. And I know everyone listening is going to be moved in a way that is really valuable.
Thank you. So, that's very kind of you to say.
Thank you for joining here today. We're going to wrap this up. And besides the actual site, legalnomads.com, do you have anywhere else you'd like to drive people to check out the adventures that you are on?
Sure. I'm Legal Nomads on Instagram as well, and on Facebook. I do use Snapchat with the same URL, but I mean, I'm not the most avid snapper. I joke that, you know, when my pieces are 5,000 to 10,000 words long, the Snapchat audience are likely not my target. But the hand-drawn maps of food, those are something I'm really excited about too. And they are basically a typographic map of the country with all the foods around it. They're one of a kind. And I'm going to be doing 10 in all. So I've done Vietnam, Mexico, Portugal, and Thailand. And the next one will be Italy. It's just been really delightful to put these art prints out there and see people. I've run into people wearing them on t-shirts on the street, which is super cool. And that's just at shop.legalnomads.com.
Awesome. Cool. Well, I'm sure people will be checking that out and again, be inspired, motivated, and really fired up to get out there on their own adventures. So thank you again for sharing your story.
Thanks for having me.
That is the end. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks, Jody, for joining us for a lovely chat today. I am Chris Ruggiero. Thank you for listening to my show. You guys rock. Thank you guys for sending messages and listening and letting me know what you would like to hear. You can continue doing that. Go to chrisruggiero.com, click on the contact page. Send me a message or find me on Instagram, whatever. If you want to find me on Instagram or Snapchat for my daily adventures, you can do that. My name is One Man Variety, spelled out One Man Variety. Add me on there. We can chat, hang out. Thanks, guys. That's it. So these episodes now are pretty much consistently coming out on Wednesdays. So check the site for like what's coming up soon. If you see somebody that you really want to hear, you'll see that all coming up, new episodes every Wednesday. There it is. Lock it in. I'm committing to it. It'll be there for you. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Chris Ruggiero Podcast.